DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Russell Shaw, who is a widely published author and journalist who has written 20 previous books, including To Hunt, To Shoot, To Entertain, Clericalism and the Catholic Lady, and Nothing to Hide, Secrecy, Communication, and Communion in the Catholic Church. For 18 years, he directed media relations for the National Conference of Catholic Bishops and the United States Catholic Conference. From 1987 to 1997, he oversaw media relations for the Knights of Columbus. With Russell Shaw, we go inside the pages of American Church, the remarkable rise, meteoric fall, and uncertain future of Catholicism in America. Published by Ignatius Press. Russell, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, it's good to be talking with you, Chris.
American Church, the remarkable rise, meteoric fall, and uncertain future of Catholicism in America, a very compelling book and provocative in very many ways. What led you to write it?
Well, I say to people that in a certain real sense, I've been writing the book for 40 years. I recall back in the early 1970s, I wrote a magazine article whose title was The Alienation of American Catholics. And what I was talking about there, this was shortly after Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court's abortion decision. Mm-hmm. So when I talked about the alienation of American Catholics, I was trying to suggest that the abortion decision was representative of what I had begun to perceive as a continuing movement on the part of American secular culture into in directions which were very hostile to, very contrary to Catholic values and beliefs. And I meant to say that this was alienating for at least some of us American Catholics. And I cited other examples, too, of this process of an ongoing shift, as I saw it, in secular culture in directions which were very alarming from the point of view of Catholic values. What I didn't realize when I wrote and published that article, but soon enough began to realize, was that a lot of my fellow Catholics had begun to assimilate into this shifting secular culture and were quite happy with it and were picking up its values and its attitudes contrary to the values of their own Catholic tradition. So I became interested in that phenomenon and alarmed by it and began to look into the historical background and to write about it now and then. And I've been doing that now for 40 years. It finally all came together, gelled, you might say, in this book, American Church.
Yeah, that Americanization of the immigrant, of those Irish, Germans, Poles, Italians, all of those who came into this land who were, as you said, they were discriminated against, not just because they were Catholic, but because they culturally came from such a different ethnic background than those who were already here.
That's right. It was religious discrimination and ethnic discrimination that they had to deal with. But of course, their religion and their ethnicity were one and the same thing in the case of these immigrants. So you can distinguish the two things conceptually, so to speak, but in reality, there was no distinguishing them. And that's what they had to overcome, hostility to them as Catholic Irish Americans, Catholic Italian Americans, and it was tough. I mean, that it got very unpleasant. It got violent, in fact, at times. The attacks on the immigrant Catholics, and I repeat, this policy of rapid and thoroughgoing Americanization was the best response possible in that time and place.
Yeah, what Cardinal Gibbons saw and even Pope Benedict, in his last visit to the United States, reiterated that there is the opportunity in America, which so many in the world have never have the opportunity, given their systems and their particular cultures in other parts of the world. So the opportunity for those poor immigrants who came here to be able to use the American ideal to be able to better themselves and their families, the church wanted that for them. But it kind of came at a cost, didn't it?
It did come at a cost. But, you know, I'm in my book, I'm not taking an anti-American view of the things. Mm-hmm. The American system is a wonder to behold in many ways. And the American relationship between church and state is fundamentally a very healthy thing. You know, somebody asked me the other day, why do you think it is that with all our problems here in the United States, we American Catholics are probably in religious terms in a lot healthier situation than Catholicism in Europe, in countries like France and Germany and Spain and so forth, where, you know, participation in the church is way, way down, let's face it, and the church is indeed in a very serious crisis there in many places in Europe. We've got problems, and they're deep and serious problems, but they're by no means as bad as the problems of European Catholicism. And the question was, how come? And my answer was, you know, I suppose there are many explanations for that, but the best explanation, I think, lies in the American system of church-state separation, however interpreted. Church-state separation has made it possible for us Catholics here in the United States to avoid the bitter anti-clericalism, which mm-hmm. has erupted and been very inimical to Catholicism in many places in Europe, in France, for example, in Spain, in Italy to some extent, and now even in Catholic Ireland. That anti-clericalism is in large part a product of years and even centuries of involvement on the part of clerics, religious people, priests and bishops. Their direct involvement in the political process, now deeply resented and resisted and reviewed from a highly anti-clerical perspective. And that's that added dimension of anti-clericalism, which accounts for the difference, I think, the difference in degree between the problems of the church in the United States and the problems of the church in Europe. We don't have that kind of bitter, virulent anti-Catholicism in this country, thank God, and I attribute that historically to church-state separation.
The warnings, potentially, would you say, of Leo XIII concerning America, is that something we haven't really taken to heart? Should we?
Well, we certainly should. We should have taken it to heart at the time. Mm-hmm. That's a fascinating story, a very, very complex story, which I try to tell clearly and honestly in my book. Back in 1899, Pope Leo XIII issued a document. It was called Testem Benevolentiae, by the way. That's a Latin title, means roughly testimony to goodwill. He published this document in which he specifically and by name condemned something which he called Americanism. Now, exactly what American was and at the time and what it might be today, that's a controverted issue. But it's pretty clear from Pope Leo's document that what he was talking about were currents in the American Church's way of thinking about things which were at odds with traditional Catholicism. For example, views of the essence of religious life. The Pope saw a kind of activist model of religious life being substituted for a more supernatural and contemplative version of religious life under the heading of Americanism. That's what the Pope was talking about has indeed been a large part of the crisis in American religious life in the last 30 or 40 years. It's something we're still living with and seeing the sad, sad results of. Or, again, Pope Leo described and criticized a phenomenon which we today call, although he didn't call it this, but we today refer to it as cafeteria Catholicism. He's got a very clear description of that in this document. You know, this tendency that you see among on the part of so many Catholics to pick and choose among Catholic doctrines and Catholic practices. I agree with this, and so that's fine. I'll accept it. But I don't happen to agree with that, so I'm not going to pay any attention to it. That mentality is very widespread, I'm sorry to say, among Catholics in the United States at the present time. And Pope Leo, back in 1899, saw it already beginning to emerge in the church in this country. And again, he called it Americanism, and he condemned it. What Pope Leo said back then was widely dismissed by the Catholics of that era. The leadership of the church denied that they held any such views and tried to shrug it off and sweep it under the rug, which is too bad, because if people had taken what the Pope was saying seriously back then and had taken the necessary steps to rectify the situation, I can't believe that our problems now would be quite as deep and serious as they are.
Yeah, this is the same Pope who told Catherine Drexel when she said, you have to do something about the African Americans and the Native Americans and missioning to them. He looked at her and said, you go do it.
Pope Leo was not an old fogey. He was quite an intelligent and forward-looking man, and gave the church inspired leadership in his time.
That mindset of the 19th century of helping that immigrant population assimilate into America and to be able to flourish has led to the generations now where we have, even in our political structure, so many quote-unquote American Catholics, and yet are they Roman Catholic? Is that the question today, Russell?
Yeah, in what meaningful sense can so many nominal Catholics of today really be described as Catholics? I don't rely too heavily on the numbers, but the numbers are indicative here. To begin with, one really disastrous number, the people who do this kind of research tell us that there are some 22 million people in the United States at the present time who were raised as Catholics but are not Catholics anymore. Formally, they have quit the church. Mm-hmm. About half of them have affiliated with some other religious body, and about half of them are just simply unaffiliated in religious terms. That's 22 million Americans raised as Catholics, and now they've left the church. The numbers people also tell us that overall, at the present time, there are about 75 million self-identified Catholics in this country, 75 million people who still call themselves Catholic. Now, that sounds pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. 75 million is a lot of people. But when you look at that number closely, you discover that of that 75 million, only about 1 in 5, that's about 15 million, go to the trouble of attending Mass every Sunday.
Hmm.
15 million out of 75 million go to Mass every Sunday. That leaves 60 million of those putative Catholics who go to Mass seldom, or in many cases, never. And that sort of reality, which has got to make you scratch your head and say, in what sense are folks like that really Catholics? It's not my business, you know, Chris, as a writer, to read anybody out of the church. That's up to somebody else. Ultimately, it's up to God. But I think that's fair enough to say, in what sense are folks like that who seldom or never attend Mass, in what sense are they really Catholics any longer? And it's not just Mass attendance. This is true of the sacramental life of the church generally. You know, people don't go to confession anymore, or penance, reconciliation. Catholic marriages are way, way down. Infant baptisms are way, way down. Almost anything that you can measure in respect to the religious practice of Catholics is way, way down. at the present time. And I repeat, the numbers don't get to the heart of the problem, but they surely do make it clear that there is some kind of very serious problem out there with respect to the religious identity and the religious commitment of lots and lots of people who may call themselves Catholics, but really don't live like Catholics.
There was a time maybe 10 or 15 years ago, maybe even longer than that, Russell, that so many people thought, well, we just have to educate them about the faith. And so in a beautiful way, this whole apologetic type of movement came forward, and we learned different proof texts, how to prove where Catholic teaching is in various aspects of the scripture, or what that may look like. A lot of knowledge things. But if knowledge were just enough, you could take a look at the microcosm that is the current RCIA situation in the American Catholic Church, where we will have an enormous number of people come into the church after taking quote-unquote sessions, RCIA sessions, or going through a program. And the statistics are alarming when you see a third of that number could potentially not be practicing the faith or going to Mass 1 year later. And an even greater number, 4 years down the road, are no longer even practicing their faith. What is missing, not just in that group, but then in the larger one, that, you know, those Catholics that are baptized as babies and come through, and yet that younger generation is the generation that it goes against church teaching and supports a redefinition of marriage. Mm-hmm. What's happening there?
I guess several things are missing. One thing that's obviously missing is that the catechesis, the religious education and religious formation, stops for so many people at a certain point in their lives. In many cases, it's confirmation. You receive confirmation, and mm-hmm. you've done it. You've done everything you need to do, and gone as far as you need to go, and you don't have to learn anything more about the faith. And as a matter of fact, you don't even have to practice the faith anymore. Mm-hmm. Confirmation is one of those, you know, crucial points in the whole process, when many people more or less just drop away from the church. And as far as RCIA is concerned, yes, it's sort of the same. People who they're just dropped into large anonymous parishes. Where they sink or swim, and many of them sink or just disappear after a while, because whatever it was that they were looking for when they became Catholics, they haven't found it, and so they go off and look somewhere else. God help them. God bless them.
Maybe what they're looking for is Jesus Christ.
They're looking for Jesus Christ, of course.
Yep. What do you see as a response of the hierarchy of the church in the United States now, with this new media that's out there? I mean, what do you see for the future?
I'm certainly not a wide-eyed optimist, but I'm not a hard-bitten pessimist either. I think there are signs mm-hmm. of hope. The game isn't over yet by any means, but it's going to require a lot of courage and commitment to turn things around and build a better future than we've had for some time. I'm much impressed with many, many members of the American hierarchy today. When you see them up close and get to know them a little bit personally, they're wonderful men. And while I worked for the bishops for 18 years sometime back, and the bishops back then were good guys and very sincere, committed church leaders, I think on the whole, the current crop of bishops are an even more impressive lot than the hierarchy was in those years going by. So we've got pretty strong leadership of the church in this country now, and although we have fewer priests and the number is going to decline, many of our new and younger priests, as well as the older men, are indeed highly committed fellows doing a great job. So the leadership is there, and there are a lot of good lay people out there as well who are waiting for opportunities to pitch in and do their share, but they need formation and they need direction, which I hope will be forthcoming from the leadership in new and effective ways, including media ways. My prescription for the future comes down to two things. First of all, I think we need a new, vital, vibrant Catholic subculture in this country. Mm-hmm. We had a pretty good subculture at one time, but we tossed it away in the heady days of the 1960s and 1970s, and that was a great mistake. We need to reconstruct a subculture of programs and institutions which with a firm Catholic identity, precisely in order to create and sustain the Catholic identity of Catholic people, and also to motivate and form people for evangelization. You know, this new subculture can't be simply inward-looking, can't be a kind of new ghetto. It's got to be outward-oriented, looking toward the secular culture with the intention of evangelizing it, with the intention of preaching the gospel to our fellow Americans, to a much greater extent than American Catholics up to this time have ever dreamed of doing. And that's got to be seen as everyone's responsibility, not just the responsibility of the bishops or the priests or the religious or something like that. Everybody's got to play his or her own role in this new evangelization. And if everyone doesn't pitch in and do part of the job, the job isn't going to get done. But to make that a reality, then we need the second part of my program. And it sounds like a cliche, but I mean it. Sincerely, we need a real, honest to goodness spiritual renewal. We need to take seriously Vatican II's universal call to holiness. Now, people pay lip service to that idea, but we're lacking in programs of formation on the parish and diocesan levels. Programs of formation for the laity, which really, you know, hold out practical means from which people can grow in their faith and grow in their spirituality. There are a lot of good lay people out there, and many of them are looking for something like this, but it has to come down to the parish level, you know, where the parish is more than just a place where you go to fulfill the kind of minimal legalistic religious duties. It's got to be a place where an intense and deep and highly committed form of religious formation is available and easily available to everybody who wants it. And we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe in some places yet, but generally, no. I think yet that has to be a central element of the rebirth of the American Catholic Church, or absent that, we're going to be in for worse trouble in the future.
I think we have to listen to Leo XIII, just as he told Catherine Drexel. Don't complain about it. Get out there. You do it.
You do it. Yeah. You know, it comes with baptism, that call to apostolate, as we used to call it. It's not something you need to wait around and be asked or told to do. You should be looking, you know, each one of us, for his or her own opportunities. But we need formation. Mm-hmm. We need guidance. We need direction. The leadership has got to do their share in providing us with programs and projects in which these apostolic energies can be channeled into evangelistic activities of all sorts. So it can be done, but it's not going to happen automatically. We have to start doing it.
Yeah, I love that call to, that universal call to holiness, because those people that come to the RCIA, or those who are come to church, when they're seeking truth, they're seeking Him, aren't they?
They are. They're looking for something, and they're looking for something on a very deep level. They may not know yet exactly what it is they're looking for. They may not be able to give it a name, but they're looking for a person, Jesus Christ, and they're looking for practical means of entering into an ongoing deep relationship with Christ. That's what they need. That's what they need. That's what they want. And the church has those means available to it, if only it knows how to organize them and present them to Catholics to a much greater extent than it's been accustomed to do up to now. As I say, religious formation up to now has been a sometimes spotty thing. Maybe, you know, an elite group have benefited from it, but the mass of Catholics have been accustomed to getting a kind of minimalistic version of what a commitment to Christ really entails. And that's not going to work anymore. We need a wholehearted commitment to Christ, and we need to be told how to go about making that sort of commitment.
Yeah, you may not be able to see that necessarily coming from a particular bishop in a particular talk, but boy, you sure see it exemplified in the life of like St. Therese or John of Retamala or Maximilian Kolbe, all of those who strive for holiness in their own way and kind of lead the charge for us, don't they?
They do. They're towering, exemplary figures. Most of us aren't towering figures at all, though. But we need to understand, too, that for most of us, the realization of holiness, of sanctity, is going to come about precisely in the circumstances of our everyday lives, in our family life, our neighborhoods, our relationships with friends and co-workers. It's in those everyday, ordinary situations in which we're going to live out the gospel message and give our own model of Christ-like living to the people around us. And that's the form that our most effective evangelization is going to take.
Well, Russell, I think the American church is so compelling. It helps you to understand how we got to the point where we're at right now, but it also inspires to venture forward. And truly, I just love it. I wish we had more time. Any final thoughts?
Well, I think first of all, I'm very grateful for what you just said about the book, because that's essentially what I'm trying to do in the book, those two things, to present the problem and the roots of the problem clearly and realistically in a way that perhaps many people have not understood up to this time. And then not just to leave it at the problem, but to at least to indicate the directions in which solutions to the problem can be found. And as I say, for me, the solutions primarily are a new, healthy, outward-looking Catholic subculture and a new commitment to the pursuit of sanctity for each of us, and a sanctity which necessarily involves acting out our role as evangelizers of the culture around us.
Mm. Well, amen, let it be.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
With Russell Shaw, we've gone inside the pages of American Church, The Remarkable Rise, Meteoric Fall, and Uncertain Future of Catholicism in America. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to Ignatius.com. The website for its publisher, Ignatius Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.